Chapter 4. Needs, Instinctual Drives. Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs. Abraham Maslow was an American psychologist in the last century who came up with a list that ranks human needs in order of priority. Maslow's theory is that an individual's basic needs must be met before they become motivated to achieve higher-level needs. On the pyramid of Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs, there are 5 levels. I will first list them briefly in order, then examine each in a bit more detail. The first level of needs, which are at the bottom of the pyramid, are the physiological needs. On the second level are the needs for safety and security. On the third level are the needs for social belonging and love. On the fourth level are the needs for esteem, meaning the need for respect and admiration. And finally, on the fifth and highest level of needs, at the top of the pyramid, is the need for self-actualization, which is to fulfill our need for meaning and purpose in life. Now we will examine each in a bit more detail. The bottom of the pyramid contains the first level of our needs, the physiological needs. These lowest level needs are necessary for our physical survival: food, water, breathing, shelter, clothing, sleep, sex, and homeostasis. This lowest level of needs is self-centered to ensure our individual survival and the survival of the species. Notice that sex is listed on this lowest level of our needs. I emphasize later how sex is one of our strongest instinctual drives influencing our motives. Once the physiological needs are met, people can focus on their safety and security needs. This level refers to our need for financial security, personal security, health and physical safety, and emotional security. Everyone wants to feel secure and safe from harm. If our safety and security needs are taken away or threatened by war, natural disasters, family violence, or childhood abuse, that can lead to post-traumatic stress disorder and chronic anxiety. People generally seek getting their needs for safety and security being met before focusing on any of the higher level needs. Economic crisis and lack of work opportunities affect our financial security needs. Throughout this book, I sometimes refer to financial security needs as money, which can also be viewed as our desire for resources that enable our survival. I refer to the financial security need for money as a powerful driver behind our motivations and choices. There are different types of needs or instincts associated with security, but financial security is the one I focus on most because it is the one that most promotes selfishness. After the first 2 levels of needs are met, we can begin to focus on the higher levels of needs. The third level of our needs is for social belonging and love. This need can override the need for safety, as when children cling to abusive parents, or victims stay with their domestic violence abusers. Social belonging includes friendships, family, social groups, and romantic attachments. Some reasons that people do not get these needs met include hospitalization, neglect, shunning, or ostracism. Humans need to feel a sense of belonging and acceptance among small or large social groups. Some examples of large social groups are coworkers, religious communities, sports teams, and gangs. Some examples of small social groups are families, intimate partners, mentors, colleagues, and confidants. Humans need to love and to be loved by others. In the absence of love and belonging, people experience depression, isolation, and social anxiety. The fourth level of our needs is esteem, which is respect and admiration. Self-esteem is self-respect and admiration, which comes from giving and being of service to others, not just ourselves. Maslow describes a lower and higher version of esteem. The lower version is the need for others to respect and admire us. The higher version is the need to be respected and admired by ourselves. According to Maslow, the fifth and highest level of needs is self-actualization, or, in his words, the full realization of one's potential and of one's true self. Self-actualization is to fulfill our meaning and purpose in life. To find meaning, we must find our purpose, which is defined as how we can best use our unique talents and skills to serve everything and everyone around us. It is to find and practice how we can best benefit and contribute to the greater good. Figure 1. Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs. On the pyramid of Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs, there are 5 levels. I will first list them briefly in order, then examine each in a bit more detail. The first level of needs, which are at the bottom of the pyramid, are the physiological needs. On the second level are the needs for safety and security. On the third level are the needs for social belonging and love. On the fourth level are the needs for esteem, meaning the need for respect and admiration. And finally, on the fifth and highest level of needs, at the top of the pyramid, is the need for self-actualization, which is to fulfill our need for meaning and purpose in life. Needs equal instinctual drives. The needs can also be called instinctual drives, with the terms becoming interchangeable. The primary, lower-level needs are self-centered, whereas the higher-level needs are other-centered. There are some basic primary physical needs that have no off switch. They drive us to always seek more, regardless of how much we already have. The two most dominant of these needs are sex and financial security or money. I focus on these two needs, or instinctual drives, which are found in the first two levels of Maslow's hierarchy, as the primary drivers of our self-centered behaviors. These are the two primary needs or instincts that cause us to justify harming or neglecting others. To move up in the hierarchy of needs to esteem and self-actualization requires a conscious effort to shift away from focusing on self-centered physical needs and towards the needs that involve community and service to others. Our needs for sex and financial security, or money, are the primary drivers behind our selfishness. Instinct defined. A largely inheritable and unalterable tendency of an organism to make a complex and specific response to environmental stimuli without involving reason. A natural or intuitive way of acting or thinking. Behavior that is mediated by reactions below the conscious level. Instincts are our hardwiring, our pre-programming. Instincts can also be defined as our needs or desires in some cases. Again, I am focusing on the two most powerful and challenging of our hardwired drives, which are the instinctual drives for sex and financial security. These two most powerful instinctual drives strongly influence our free will choices below the conscious level. These drives are selfish. Some selfishness is necessary for our survival, but when it dominates and controls our decisions and focus, we have problems. Managing these two powerful instincts is required for us to evolve. Life is stressful when physiological needs are not met or are threatened. We all experience stress when our basic needs for food and shelter are lost or threatened, and we also feel the relief that money brings by lowering the stresses that accompany poverty. Naturally, we assume that more money will bring even greater degrees of relief. However, our instincts for financial security are insatiable. We tell ourselves that getting more will be the solution to our discontent and unhappiness. But satisfaction is not attained by getting more for ourselves. To the contrary, satisfaction is attained by doing the complete opposite, namely giving more and being of service to others, helping them to meet their needs. Throughout this book, I will be referring to these two dominant selfish needs of sex and financial security or money as instinctual drives. How much money is enough? How much money do I really need? How much is enough? Well, if my instinctual drive for financial security or money answers that question, there's never enough. I have experienced the stress of not having enough money to cover my basic needs for food and shelter. I have also had the relief of having enough money to not have to worry about those basic needs. My experience has shown me that once my basic needs are met, my ability to acquire more stuff does not add to my overall happiness and satisfaction with life. Because of our instincts for financial security, even once our basic needs are met, we live under the illusion that more money will increase our overall contentment and satisfaction with life. Our instincts for financial security will always tell us that it is not smart or safe to give to others. Our instincts will always justify keeping more for ourselves. The lie is that the farther I am away from the stresses of poverty, the more content I will be. If given free rein, our instincts for financial security will always justify selfishness. The stress of not having basic needs met is real. Many of us believe that having more money will eventually fix us, bringing us the happiness we lack now. Many of us cannot give to others because our instincts tell us that we still need to get more before we can give anything away. That is why we feel the need to keep getting more and more and more. We may do some giving, but we usually keep most of what we obtain for ourselves. We think that having more will give us what we're searching for, but it won't. Beyond meeting our basic needs for food and shelter, hoarding wealth will not provide a deeper sense of purpose or well-being. In our selfish pursuit of more for ourselves, we are taken farther away from authentic connections with others. Being of service to others is what is required to obtain the real peace and joy that we seek. Our instincts for financial security will always say, we just don't have enough to give right now. And that is true no matter how much we actually have. Our instinct for financial security promotes and encourages selfish hoarding. The more money we have, the stronger the tendency is to hold on to it, and the stronger the fear is of losing it. Finding a balance between saving and hoarding. As our current societies function, we do need money to provide for our present and future needs. But the question is, how much money? In an ideal world, we would live on our daily bread. But this attitude and action can, and usually does, put a burden on others to provide for us. The norm is for parents to provide for their children. But once those children become adults, unless they are disabled, expecting others to provide for them is selfish. It is selfish to expect others to take care of us when we haven't earned or saved anything to provide for ourselves. Circumstances can change suddenly, so we should be prepared for emergencies. It is responsible to have a prudent financial reserve to cover personal expenses for some time into the future. But how much is necessary? The goal is to find a balance between responsible saving and selfish hoarding. That is a question for all individuals to examine and decide for themselves. Asking others for money. How often do you ask others to lend or give you money? If you do that consistently, whether it's once a month or every 6 months, that can be a sign of selfishness or at least of poor money management. If you borrow the money, do you pay it back in a timely fashion or at all? You may be living beyond your means or pursuing too extravagant a lifestyle, expecting others to foot your bills. Your goal should be to live within your means, keeping a prudent reserve to help yourself in emergency times. When you ask others for money, you are asking them to make sacrifices for you. Are you willing to make sacrifices for others, or do you expect others to continually make sacrifices for you? Inheritance can be a curse. We have heard that the love of money is the root of all evil. After my dad died, I received an inheritance. Money can bring out greed in people when it comes to who gets what from an inheritance, and that greed for money can tear families apart. Sometimes they heal later, but sometimes not. My inheritance separated me from those in my family who were left out. It's sad how selfish, greedy, and foolish our instincts can make us behave over money. Can money buy love? Money can buy pretend, temporary, conditional love, but it cannot buy real, unconditional, lasting love. Money cannot buy time, peace, health, character, integrity, or true friends. If you could be granted any wish, what would it be? What's the first thing that comes to mind? Is the answer something selfish, or is it something beyond yourself for the greater good? Our default mode is to be selfish. Lottery winners. A classic question is, if you won the multi-million-dollar lottery, what will you do? Usually, the responses are selfish. Oh, I want this. I want that. I want a car. I want a vacation. I want. It's always me, me, me. Not many people will say, I want to help poor people and give to others who are in need or suffering in some way. Who says that? Practically no one. Have you ever prayed to win the lottery and bargained with God by promising that you would help people if you won? Meanwhile, deep down, you knew you wouldn't follow through, or at least is not as much as you promised to God. And then you immediately felt guilty because of that thought. You always knew you wouldn't win because your underlying thoughts were selfish. If I won the lottery, you say, that would solve all my problems and I'd be so happy. But would you? If you won the lottery, would you be a giver or a taker? When we examine the history of lottery winners, we discover that many spend it all and go broke in a relatively short period of time. Why? Because they use the money to try to make themselves happy rather than to benefit or help others. In addition to losing the money, they usually also lose their friends, who disappear as soon as the money runs out. Happiness is in the future once I get... Most of us have a persistent belief that we will find happiness sometime in the future, once we obtain some relationship, possession, or goal. I would be happy, we say, if I can only get a new partner, or get married, or own a home, or graduate, or go on a vacation, or decorate my house, or start a hobby, or get the job I desire, or get a new car. But all those things come and go, and they don't give us the feeling we expected, or the excited feelings don't last very long. Then it's, okay, what's next? And we remain a hamster on the treadmill. Happiness is not a choice. I just read a post on Facebook in which someone said, happiness is a choice. I responded, happiness is a byproduct and the result of the actions of giving to others unconditionally. Happiness is not a choice. At least, it is not a direct choice. It is an indirect choice that results from unconditional giving. Being unselfish earns the positive consequence of happiness. There is no on and off switch for happiness. Sure, we would love to have one so that we could be happy with no effort and no sacrifice. But that kind of thinking is the root cause of the problem of our being unhappy in the first place, because it is selfish and self-centered. It's wanting something for nothing all the time, all take, no give. When we seek to control our happiness by using alcohol or drugs, the consequences are usually negative, if not devastating. Instincts and self-centeredness have to be consistently overcome and managed for us to get the happiness we desire through giving and an others-centered lifestyle. The selfish gratification pleasures that we chase tend to fade quickly, and then we say, I need it again. I need more. I want more. I'm never satisfied. When you're living that way, you're in a state of constant restlessness and irritability. It's like being stuck in a cycle of hell. No peace, no satisfaction, no rest. You're never pleased with what you have, with where you are, or with what you're doing. You always think that if you can change the scene and go somewhere else, or be with someone else, or get something else, then you will be satisfied and happy. That's a lie. It's an illusion. It's living in denial of the truth. What we are seeking is bliss, peace, joy, and happiness. The problem is that those feelings do not come from getting, from pleasure, or from self-gratification. Once you have done enough unconditional giving, you will obtain a deep, lingering peace, a feeling that all will be fine, regardless of circumstances. That peace will allow you to start breaking free of the need for instant gratification, which is the non-stop attempt to maintain a fading buzz of some sort. I'll be happy when I get more. Will getting more make you happy? In my late 20s, I made more money than I ever had before, way more than I needed to cover my basic needs. But I became more selfish than I had ever been. Why was that? I gave less when I had more. Why? For me, having more didn't make me feel happy, so I thought, I don't have enough yet. I used that logic to justify being greedy. Then my instincts kicked in with lies that told me I still need more, and if I get more, then I'll be happy, because happy hadn't happened yet. But that's the lie. More is never enough. There's no amount of money or stuff that will ring the happy bell, because happiness does not come from getting. It comes as a byproduct of giving. At the time, I had more to give, but I didn't give it to experience the happiness I was seeking, because my instincts were dominating and controlling me. If I only had a new Corvette, I told myself, I would be happy. So I got one. The excitement lasted for about 3 months, but that was excitement, not happiness. I was not closer or more connected to other people as a result of getting that car. People did not like me more because I had that car. In fact, I sensed envy and jealousy from others because of that car. Having that Corvette did not bring me closer to others, as I falsely imagined it would. Sure, the car was fun to drive, but that fun faded over a short time, and then I was looking for another source of fun and excitement. The same pattern has repeated over and over with my romantic relationships, since I always sought something new and different for excitement. The newness that brings the unknown, mystery, and excitement always fades over time. Chasing novelty can be entertaining, but it gets old fast. Getting anything or anyone is only a brief distraction that starts to fade soon after the first encounter. Furthermore, the fantasy of the chase is never the reality. Seeking something or someone to fill a craving is to remain in a perpetually dissatisfied state of suffering. As Buddhism says, to restate the truth, any mindset that revolves around getting to make me happy will only turn out to disappoint me. True happiness is a byproduct of giving, not getting. Instant gratification versus delayed gratification. Our instinctual programming for survival and selfishness is much stronger than the whispers of our heart, which tells us to deny ourselves, love one another, and serve and sacrifice for others. Our instinctual demands versus our heart's whispers create a constant, never-ending battle between them. Some people label this fight flesh versus spirit. The heart's guidance system directs us to give and love, but it is only a faint whisper compared to the shouting, screaming demands of the instinctual drives, which want instant gratification. The heart's desires usually involve self-sacrifice and delayed gratification, which are not directed by the instinct-based, immature, instant gratification of getting a selfish pleasure satisfied at the moment. The instant gratification feelings that come from getting something new, or sex, or drugs, fade quickly. The heart is patient and wiser, wanting the deeper, more constant feelings of happiness, peace, and joy, which are earned by the delayed gratification of unconditionally giving over time. Instincts. Sex, sex, and more sex. Why do we want sex? The obvious primary purpose of sex is for us to procreate. There is also a selfish pleasure reward component. But what fundamentally drives this powerful urge, this instinctual drive in humans? The sexual urge in humans, both male and female, is primarily driven by the hormone testosterone. Most people know that testosterone is the primary male trait influencer hormone, but both sexes require this hormone to have a sex drive. Without testosterone, neither gender would desire sex. On average, men have levels of testosterone up to 30 times higher than women do. That is why men have a much higher sex drive in general than women. According to Healthline.com, for men over 19, normal testosterone levels range between 240 and 950 nanograms per deciliter. For women over 19, normal testosterone levels range between 8 and 60 nanograms per deciliter. I took testosterone supplements for 2 years, so I've had personal experience with increasing and decreasing it in my system. A couple of years ago, I decided to join the new fad of testosterone supplements with the intent of having more energy, increased strength, losing waist fat, and gaining muscle. My levels went from 280 to 700 nanograms per deciliter, more than double my normal levels at the time, which supposedly put me back to the testosterone level of a 20-year-old male. Doubling my testosterone level increased my strength, muscle mass, ambition, and sexual drive. But the increased testosterone also increased my feelings of anger and aggression. After being on testosterone supplements for over a year, I decided to stop them. Then I learned that after ceasing testosterone supplements, the body can take up to a year to produce natural levels again. A month after I stopped taking the supplements, my blood level of testosterone dropped from 700 to 37 nanograms per deciliter. My doctor said that was the lowest level he had ever seen for a male. At that extremely low level, my sex drive completely disappeared. I was like a child before puberty, with no sexual desires, urges, or thoughts. It was a return to innocence. I actually didn't mind this at the time. It was a relief to be given a break from thinking about sex for a while. What I didn't like about the lower testosterone level was the noticeable decline in physical strength and overall decrease in ambitious drive. I also didn't like feeling fear on greater levels and feeling more emotionally sensitive. I have watched nature documentaries that show male elephants, seals, and elk during mating season with their high testosterone levels urging them to fight, gouge, and even kill each other for access to females. This behavior is prompted solely by testosterone. All those male animals are violently competing for the right to mate and spread their genes. Testosterone is the hormone that drives procreation in the human species and many others. But it not only has driven procreation, it has also enabled man's drive to hunt and kill for survival. Because men have much higher levels of testosterone than women do, they commit the majority of violent and sexual assaults. Testosterone challenges our evolution, which will require choosing not to fight or react in anger, regardless of our hormonal-driven feelings to do so. Human partnership is usually a conditional trade for sex and financial security. Generally speaking, in intimate partnerships, women instinctually seek financial security and protection, whereas men seek sexual satisfaction. These are primary traditional instinctually driven roles for each gender. There are other roles as well, which can vary, but overall, these dominate and make it easy to see where financial security and sex motivate the strings-attached trades in intimate partnerships. I have also observed these instinctually motivated roles in homosexual relationships in which one partner provides the masculine financial security and protection role and the other provides the sexual feminine role. Usually, when one side in a partnership stops providing the expected role, resentment and anger arise, which often leads to separation. For example, if breadwinners lose their job or become unable to provide financial security, their partner will probably resent that and seek a new partner who can provide. The same is true if sex is no longer provided by one of the parties. The inability to provide financial security and sex can happen to either party in a relationship due to health problems or random unforeseen changes. This is when it becomes clear whether or not the other partner can still love unconditionally. Many cannot, which is why there is so much divorce. We see these instinctual pitfalls when a woman chooses a partner based on financial security instead of attraction, which is a recipe for unhappiness from the beginning. Similarly, if a man chooses a partner primarily based on sexual attraction, ignoring or overlooking glaring incompatibilities, he is embracing sabotage from the beginning. Sex and financial security are conditional components in many intimate relationships.